All great leaders want to build a team that constantly excels and takes care of their customers. And I believe it all starts with creating the right culture. The strongest teams I've seen and work with are teams that know how to collaborate with each other. They have high levels of trust, are willing to adapt and change because they know that being complacent is a recipe for disaster. Joining me today on this episode of the Learn It All podcast is Paul Adams. Paul is the Senior Vice President of the Atlanta Braves ticket sales team, and he's been with the Braves for 35 plus years. It's clear early on in the episode that Paul is an incredible leader, and he shares exactly how he has built and sustained a high-performing sales culture by focusing on strengths over weaknesses, leading by example, and building, again, a continuous learning and growth opportunities for his team. I'm Damon Lemby, the CEO of Learn It, a live learning platform that has upskilled over 2 million people over the past 3 decades. And you're listening to the Learn It All podcast, the podcast where great leaders aren't born or made, they're constantly in the making. I hope you really enjoyed this episode. I know I did. I had a great time with Paul, and there's so many learning lessons here for you. All right, let's get ready and dive into today's episode. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Damon.
Thanks again for coming on. You know, earlier in the year, I think it was in February, you were kind enough to let me come out to Atlanta and come to Truist Field and meet and work with your team. And I'll be honest, it was literally one of the best parts about my career. And for all you listeners out there, I'm sure you've heard me talk over the years about how I was drafted by the Atlanta Braves and how baseball was such a big part of my life. So that was such a tremendous experience. I want to thank you for that. And also say that during the day I spent with your team, it was very clear and easy to see what a great culture, sales culture you've built over there. People were engaged. They're participating. They're getting along. There wasn't everybody playing on their phones, showing up late and leaving. So really my first question for you, Paul, is how have you been able to build and more importantly, sustain such a great sales culture over the years?
Well, it's kind of interesting how we bring people into our sales culture is that we often bring them in a trainee role. And these are kids that come right out of school. They've graduated college, 4 years of college, but we bring them in and they start at hourly wage and we give them some commission. And it's kind of a minor league system for us. We get to see who they are. They get to see what we're all about. And then we actually have, you know, I may say that's double A. And then we actually have a triple A where they can go to a sales associate. And it's still a part, not a full-time job yet, but they get to work another year with us. And then we just recently promoted two of our sales associates to full-time. So I think that it's the training aspect that they understand our culture, what they're getting themselves into. And not all those trainees, you know, it might be 8 trainees and only 4 of them are going to be sales associates the next year. They get to see and understand how we want to sell Atlanta Braves to our customers. And that, you know, it could be B2C or it could be B2B, but we have a great training system within our, you know, we have a guy on our staff, Dan Eanes, who does all of our internal training. And we feel it's important that we have a continual training process. So not only do we have a tailored training process within our department, but we also use Learn It. And because we feel, you know, we had a survey done of our employees a couple of years ago, and one of the things they wanted was a continued education. They wanted more education. They wanted more development in their own personal careers. And so we feel like we give them that. I think when they come to Atlanta Braves, they know we're investing our time in them, and they see that. And I think we benefit from that when they know that we really care.
I love your approach talking about single A, double A. It sounds like what you do is hire for potential over experience, really, right? You bring them in as interns. What are the key traits or characteristics that you're looking for during the interview process to determine a good fit for your culture?
Yeah. So a lot of times we're looking for people that that were former athletes. I mean, I know it's kind of weird. I know we're in sports, But it seems like if you have a former athlete that does get involved with us, you know that they're disciplined, you know, especially if they were successful, and they understand that it's not a one and done. I mean, they understand there's lots of reps that have to be done, you know, so there might be several phone calls or several emails before they get some success, but they know that you got to put time in, and that I think a good successful athlete knows that. And so that, you know, that, and then we want to see if they're a team player. We do have four core values that we have as a department. It's commitment, trust, professionalism, and diversity. So we kind of, as we're interviewing people, we kind of look at those four aspects to see if how they would contribute to our team. You know, they may not be all four of those, but there might be some aspect of those that they show in the interview process.
How does trust fall into it? Because trust is something I think it's really important internally and externally. How can you kind of gauge the trust as one of the core values?
Well, I think communication is really important to build that trust. And I think it's a two-way street. I don't think it's them telling me something. I think they know that I'm, as a leader, I'm very communicative and that I am willing to do a lot of the jobs that I've asked them to do. I'm right there. Example on game days, I make sure that I work two or three games at a homestand right next to those people. It could be a trainee that I'm working next, but I feel like if I'm going to ask them to do something, I need to be able to show that I can do it also. And that's how we build trust, I think, is leading by example.
I couldn't agree more. And I try to lead the same way, where it's, you know, you put your team first, but at the same time, I don't ever want to ask people to do something that I wouldn't do myself, yeah. You know? And for instance, over the last year, I've asked people to kind of get out of their comfort zone, try things differently. And in return, I started doing what we're doing right here, is interviewing people for podcasts and doing talks. And quite frankly, it doesn't come naturally for me. Sure. And so that's just kind of like my example of leading by example, because I think that trust comes down to people have to believe that the leader is authentic, that they're transparent, and it's so important. Yeah. Going back to what you were saying, and I didn't want to pass over it, is hiring ex-athletes. I like to call it the athletic education. You know, I just think that it sets athletes apart. You know, you learn collaboration, discipline, all of those things that you talked about. And I think it's important, especially for our listeners out there who maybe sports career came to an end. All the skills that you learned are transferable. And you can, whether it's coming to work for the Atlanta Braves, or you want to get another sales job or become an entrepreneur, it's incredibly important.
Yeah. I'll use an example. I love baseball growing up, but I ended up, my last year was probably ninth grade. I finished in Babe Ruth. My high school team really wasn't good at baseball, and I happened to be a better track athlete, so I ran track. And I was glad to have a coach who tailored every single person's workout specifically to that individual. I mean, I may have had to run a certain amount of hundreds for the day in this certain time, where this other guy may have had to do 220s in a certain time, but he tailored it. And I kind of take that approach with my team. I don't expect everybody to be number four hitters. Mm-hmm. I know I'm going to have a leadoff hitter. I know I'm going to have an eighth hitter. I just need to, you know, I see what they bring to the team. I want to make sure I'm maximizing their talent and their specific gift. But I want to make sure they are recognized for what they bring to the team. And so I think that what I learned from my coach, that everyone has a particular role in making us a successful team. And we were a success in my high school. It was, in fact, my college team, my high school team could beat my college team. That's how good we were. So
it sounds like that you really like to focus in on what your team's strengths are, you know, yes. And using a baseball analogy, you know, somebody might be able to play third base, but they're actually, because they got a great arm, but they're actually much better behind the plate as a catcher, for instance. And you want to find where your team members' strengths are and also what they're passionate about, right? You know, because somebody might be good at one thing, but they don't really have any interest in something else. What are your take around weaknesses? Do you spend a lot of time trying to improve the weaknesses or just really focus in on the strengths?
I focus in on strengths. And I'll have an example. I remember it was that after the first year we moved into this ballpark, and it was a tough year, you know, just ramping up to a new ballpark and working from an old ballpark. And I was driving home, it was September, and we're at the end of the season. We had a losing season. And I said, my new sale, you know, so I have a inside sales department, but I also had a business development department. And the guy that was leading the business development was out. He was not cast right. And so I realized the guy that was leading my inside sales, he would be better at the challenge of getting the business development team back up to speed. And the guy that was in business development who wasn't doing really well, I put him back into a position that he did extremely well at. And he was to not only he hired and he trained and he developed the people in inside sales. And I made that switch. And it's paid off. I mean, it's just, they both thanked me for it. But I was looking at the strengths of those individuals. Yes, I saw the weaknesses, but there's no way I was going to try to overcome. It's a lot of energy to do something on somebody who's not going to develop. And it's, you know, if they're so weak in that, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to do that. So I swapped roles, and it's really turned out really well. And Dan was the guy that leads the business development, and it worked great. So
Dan's awesome, and he's been there, I think, 19, 20 years, yeah. Right?
And Richard was the other guy who's the inside sales, and he's been with me 20 years also. So
I think that's incredible. But a lot of leaders don't see that. Do you have any insights or advice on how leaders can really understand or look at their team and figure out strengths and position them elsewhere?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's all these kind of tests you can take, but you can use tests. I'm not, you know, I think that's one tool.
Hey, I'm with you. I'm with you on that.
You know, but yeah. It's getting to know who works for you. And I have the luxury, all my leaders, I have a leadership team of 7 people. And I think the one that has the least with me might be 10 years. I mean, but I've gotten to know them, and I'll be honest with you, when we went through the pandemic, I got to know them even better. I mean, communication was extremely important at that time, and we were on the phone every day. I would at the end of the day, I would get on the phone or Zoom call, and we would touch base. And as a result of that, to this day, we meet twice a week, which we weren't doing prior to the pandemic. And now they count on, we meet Monday afternoon, we meet Thursday afternoon, and it's an hour long, and it's not just shooting the breeze. It's, you know, they come prepared. We talking how we keep moving forward. But it was something that came out of pandemic, which I never thought would have ever happened. And it did. So
Paul, when I was out there and I kind of, you had some time with individuals on your team and even over lunch, a lot of them mentioned your leadership during the pandemic. An incredible story. Can you kind of share with our listeners what happened and what you did?
So I was kind of fortunate enough to not to experience a pandemic, but I went through a strike in 1994. And I saw back during that time where owners released all their sales staff during that time. And we didn't do that. And the irony is, we won a championship in 1995. And so my boss was kind of pushing. He says, you know, you need to start looking at your staff reduction and all that. I said, no, Derek, I think this is a time that we actually need to use our staff, and we need to get on the phones and talk to our season ticket holders. And at the time, we had about 20,000 season tickets, about 8,000 accounts. I said, I think that's a better use of our manpower to stay connected with our customers. And just, it wasn't talking and selling, it was just relationships. And I think there were so many people surprised to hear from us, but they were so glad to hear from us because, you know, a lot of people were isolated at that time. And baseball is unique because we have 81 home games, we build relationships. Unlike maybe a football season, 81 games gives you the opportunity. So they become like family. And so it was really important for us to get on the phones. And we were fortunate enough in Georgia to kind of come out of the, you know, the isolation a little bit quicker than the rest of the country. And so we were in position. So people were coming back to the ballpark and you know, in fact, we were social distancing the first month, and people couldn't understand why they couldn't have this particular seat because I said, we're social distancing. But anyway, by the time at the end of that month, we were back to full force. And as a result of being back to full capacity, we were able to drive the revenues, and we were able to get four outfielders and a couple pitchers. And then we won the championship that year, world championship. So I don't know if it was experience, but it worked. So
it is experience. I mean, you saw what happened in 1994 and you looked at the forest through the trees, right? Instead of being maybe penny smart and pound foolish, you took what you learned in that situation and made it happen again. And how has that impacted the relationship with your customers, both B2B and B2C since then?
Yeah, no, we continue. There's two things here. We have a membership service team, and that's their job, is to keep on those relationships. And like with B2B, we offer a concierge service for the B2B customers, where if they have a really great client that's coming out and they need to be taken care of, we'll come up with a nice little package, you know, like maybe a bobblehead and something else, and hand deliver to their customer. We want them to look like stars, and we get so much appreciation when we do that. We also have a network, a B2B network, that we do quarterly, where they come, we set up these events, and it not only is it networking, but it's also educational. You know, we'll have some kind of speakers give a talk, and then we have a, as a result, it's gotten such good traction. We've developed a B2B directory that hey, I'm a season ticket holder, Atlanta Braves, I'm a business, and they get to put their name in there. And that gets passed around to all the other businesses. So we're creating a community around what we do, but it allows them to meet more people that way. So
is that typical for other sports teams, or is that unique?
There's a few teams that have done it. A lot of times teams do it and then it falters. Mm-hmm. We've been able to sustain it, and we've actually got a sponsor behind it now. You know, so it's great. I mean, and it gives us a reason why, even if the team isn't good on the field, we're providing community and education, and teams go up and down. I mean, we've been fortunate to have a team that's always been up here, but I've been when the team hasn't been always there, and having something like this allows businesses to be associated with Atlanta Braves. And to give value to not only their clients, but also their employees. I just think and they also, we're trying to give them, hey, I'm associated with Braves. I meet these people. I've actually gotten business out of my networking at the Atlanta Braves. So we're just trying to formalize it for them. So.
No, I think it's incredible. People want connection. People want community, especially in sports teams, right? Yeah. Because you walk around, I can't remember what that area was right around there, but I was walking around and people love the Braves, man. They love them. Yeah. And people want to be, they want, especially coming out of COVID, even a couple years later, they want to feel connected to something. And I think it's in this day and age, when it comes to sales, because sales are tough for all of us. We talked about that a little bit in the uncertainty that we see out there. If people feel connected, they trust you, and they're taken care of, it goes such a long distance. Another thing that's unique about the Braves is, aren't you, and correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't the Braves the only publicly traded sports team?
Yes. Yeah, we're owned by Liberty Media, and the beauty is they're there, but they trust. When they bought us, they kept the management team in place, because often when you switch ownerships, they often clean house. That wasn't the case with us. They saw value in what the management team brought, and So this is our seventh year, I think. Maybe it's longer now. I mean, but we're part of them, but they don't meddle. We run our business as we run a business, and they, you know, yes, we report some numbers, you know, and we're publicly traded, so we have quarterly board meetings and all that, you know, and shareholder things. But ever since I've been with Atlanta Braves, we've always run it as a business. And yes, Ted Turner owned our team many years ago, but by the time I got here, it was his company that owned us. And I've always been in a situation where we ran as a business, where a lot of other, you know, the other teams might be run by owners, and owners may just put money into the team. But we always had to show, hey, you got to have revenues so you can play the players. And that's the mindset I've always worked under. And that's, that's how we've been doing it. So I appreciate it. I mean, I always wanted to work in baseball. I mean, I loved baseball as a kid. And one of the reasons I ended up Atlanta Braves is I picked a school, a college that was close to a major league team. And the only college that I was looking at that was close to a major league team was Emory University. It's Atlanta. So that's how I ended up Atlanta in 1977, graduated in 81, started working for Atlanta Braves in 1989 as an account executive, and then just kind of progressed it from there. I mean, I was a manager in the second year. I was a director, then I became a vice president, a senior vice president, and it's how my career went. But it was part of it is, you know, talking about sales, I still sell. I still keep connection with customers, and I love the game of baseball. If you ask me to sell insurance, I don't know if I'd be very successful, but I love the game of baseball. So not only am I selling Braves baseball, I'm selling baseball, and I feel like that's what makes me go. Coming to the ballpark every day is exciting.
What advice do you give for individuals that maybe don't have as much passion for the career they're in? Paul, I'm like you. I love coming to work every day, right? Yeah. I mean, I love it. I love what I love most about Learn It, to be honest, is really my team, right? The people I'm able to surround myself with, and watching them go out and succeed and giving them, well, not giving them, they earn the credit to be there. But I work with a lot of leaders and at different levels, and a lot of them just aren't into what they're doing. You know, it's more of a paycheck job for them. Do you have any advice on how they could either turn that around or make a change?
Well, again, it's personality, I guess. My personality is I like to share what I've learned. So I make sure I'm giving back to my employees, and I've, you know, from the many years I've worked. And so what I've done the last couple of years, in January, before the season starts, from January to April, is as we're ramping up this season, I will spend time with this last year, I think I had 20 employees. So I would do 10 employees in the afternoon of one day and another 10 employees the next morning, and we would take a book, you know, a leadership book of some sort. And be honest with you, I led one session, but then I let each one of them lead a session. And two things there: yes, we're teaching, but also they're being, I'm there, and they're I'm approachable. They can ask me questions. I get to know them better, and just having that connection. And that's the kind of stuff that's what gets me going is I like building teams. I like to see them succeed. And that in addition to I love baseball, I like building teams and seeing them thrive.
Well, I mean, it's very apparent why you're a great leader. You're approachable, transparent, communicate a lot. You're down to earth with your team. And then you're actually participating with them on whether you want to call it internal book clubs. I think that makes such a big difference. I mean, one of the questions I had for you, but you kind of already explained it. As the SVP of tickets, how would you break down your day? Like, where are you spending your time?
Okay. Oh, what I love about my job is it's different every day. Yesterday I was in a meeting talking about pricing and so forth. But this morning I was in a meeting with my president and all my peers. And then I was right after that, I was in a meeting that I led along with the senior VP of marketing, and we do it jointly, is that it's a ticketing and marketing meeting that we meet once a week. We do it every day or every week. And it really, and it's foreign within baseball. I mean, often they all work in silos, but we at the Braves, we like to collaborate. And so at that meeting, we have other sales units there as well as the marketing. So we're making sure that our messaging is what we want to be messaging to our customers and our strategies and all that kind of stuff. So I had that, and then I had a meeting this afternoon to go over goals with my for 2025 with my president and some of my leaders. And so anyway, it's, and then on Wednesdays, every Wednesday at 9:30, we have a sales meeting on the floor with all the whole staff. And that's an opportunity for me to kind of set the tone. And then each head of their department will share what's going on, make sure that we're communicating with everybody on the floor, because we're kind of unique in that you can still call somebody at the Atlanta Braves and actually get a voice. And my team manages that, you know. So not only are we making outgoing calls, we're also receiving incoming calls. So we gotta know what's going on. I always tell the trainees, if you ever want to know something about the Atlanta Braves, you start as a trainee in the sales department, because you're going to know more than a lot of people that have been with this organization for 5 or 6 years. You're going to know more because you have to answer the phone and be able to share with customers what's going on. And it's true. So.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no better way than being on the front lines, yeah, picking up the phone and just talking to customers. I mean, that's one of the things I love. This goes all the way back to 1995, but I still, when I first started learning, I was a receptionist for about a year.
Yeah.
And I probably answered more calls than anybody, but just hearing the stories, the you know, the troubleshooting, what people have going on, and there's no replacement for that.
No.
And there's not enough of that these days, to be totally honest.
No, I agree. You know, unfortunately, culture, you know, we get people that all you do is email, you know.
Right.
You know, and sometimes I said, just pick up the phone and have that connection. I mean, it's like, you know, oh, we're never going to send any mail out anymore. Well, to be honest with you, you can still send mail out because people aren't sending mail out anymore. So you're going to get some visibility.
Absolutely. You know? Zig when others are zagging. And talking about culture, one thing I wanted to touch on, because Nick from my team brought it up, you guys have like a culture committee, right?
Yes.
How's that work?
Yeah. So going back when we came to this ballpark, it was my department, I'll be honest with you, was kind of a mess, because I was at the old ballpark half the day. I was at the new ballpark getting it sold. And this was before we opened up in 2017. And it was January of 2018, after the first season. I said, I got to get us back together. And so I asked the leadership team, I said, what does our department stand for? And I don't care, just write down as many things that qualities that you think we stand for. And we came up with like 75 qualities. I said, well, that's great, but that's
too
what
many.
We think.
Yeah.
Way too many. Let's get some people from the floor, from our team, and let them. So we have three disciplines on the floor. We took two people from each discipline and we let them look at that list, but come up with what we think we stand for. And that's how these core values came up. And they came up with commitment, trust, professionalism, diversity. Each of those has a subtitle, and we have those now on our wall. And so basically it knows what we stand for, not only with each other, but what we represent to our customers, but also within our organization. This is what the ticket sales department of the Atlanta Braves is. It's these four core values. And I think it gives them anchors, gives them guidelines. And so now we have this committee, and this committee is really developed. I mean, you know, we had a survey we did a while back, and the survey, you know, some of the areas that we needed to address was work-life balance, continuing department employment, company growth, promotion opportunities, personal growth opportunities, diversity. These are five things that they identified, and then they came up with some ideas. and you know, and to present to the management. And we sat down, and one of them was, hey, we want personal growth opportunities. And Nick, who's a great guy on your staff, he just happened to be talking to Dan about Learn It and said, you know what, this fits one of the things that they want. And that's how we got, we ended up doing a relationship with you guys. But we would not know that unless we had this department or this team, this core values team, kind of take a survey with our department. And it allows us to address things, but it's also, it's under them, they, you know, we celebrate birthdays every month. And we do it at the end of the day, or sometimes we do it in the morning, but we celebrate each birthday on the floor, you know, with some snacks and fun and all that kind of stuff. We celebrate births, weddings, and all that kind of stuff. And then we also do core value lunches. So when somebody joins the team, we make sure they go, the core value teams takes them out to lunch, and they kind of just welcome them, let them know where we are and who we are and all that kind of stuff. So it gives, I don't know, it's a good, you know, if we're in our leadership team and we say, hey, we're kind of perplexed about something, we can say, hey, let's throw it over to the core values team, let them talk about it and bring it back to us and what they think. So it's kind of a great communication tool, but everybody's bought into it.
You know how important it is to be able to have a type of environment, a type of culture where the leadership isn't siloed out and a bunch of know-it-alls, where they actually are open to ideas and feedback throughout their team. Because what I've found is when you have a culture like that, it motivates your team to go and even look outside and find different areas of ways to improve. I can't even tell you how many times I've coached people who work at a pretty big organization and they're scared to death to come to their manager with something because they're afraid of either getting fired or just falling out of line or just the manager getting super defensive. Yeah. So being able to do, listeners out there, if you're leading a team and you can create something like that, whether it's a culture initiative or just even having an environment where people feel comfortable to come and provide and share ideas. Now, the ideas may not be used every single time.
No.
Right?
Exactly right. I mean, in fact, like we say, hey, you guys bring a presentation to the leadership team. We may not adopt all of it, but we're going to take it and seriously contemplate it, and we're going to implement what we think is going to be beneficial for everybody. So, yeah, but it gives you that mechanism, and it also takes you out of it where, oh, that's a dumb idea. That's, you know, mm-hmm. Not if they thought through it and allow us to think through it, and then we can have a really good discussion.
So. Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's really no dumb ideas if you right. think about it. There's a great book by, I think his name is Jeremy Utley, called Idea Flow. And he talks about, I heard him speak at a conference. He talks about, it takes about 2,000 ideas to come up with a good one sometimes.
Yeah.
And so just encouraging your team to come up with ideas and throw them out there is fantastic. And also make sure that they know, like you said, hey, we're going to listen to it. We're going to give you, you know, we're going to hear about it, and we may not go in that direction. So, but whatever direction we do go on, we need you to get behind and buy into.
Yeah, and I think that a mark of a good leader is you got to adapt, you got to evolve. You can't just live in the past. You got to keep on. And that I love my job in that I have young people. It keeps me young. You just got to keep it. Adapting and evolving. You cannot just say, well, this is the way I always done it, and this is the way we're always going to do it. You can't do that.
You cannot do that. And look at, you've been here 35 years, similar to me with 29 years at Learn It. And I think what you and I have done, I mean, obviously much different in where you're running your team and I'm out here, but we just keep recreating our jobs, surrounding ourselves with great people who keep us young,
yes.
right?
Yes.
What is I want to hear a great baseball story before we finish, but you've been there 35 years. What's next for you?
Well, I definitely I'm getting near the end. I will be honest with you. I'm not quite there, but I realize that I'm closer to the end than I was before, you know, at the beginning. But I think it's making sure I leave us in a solid ground. I leave a legacy, but also make sure, and I know, I mean, my mom is not doing really well health-wise, so I've had to travel and be with her. And I've told my boss, you know, I said, and he said, no problem, Paul, you have one of the best teams around. I trust them, and you know, they can run without you. And I said, that's a good thing. I mean, you know.
That's the best compliment any leader can get, in my opinion.
Yeah. He said, don't worry, Paul, you know, but he doesn't want me to leave either. I mean, it's kind of a nice, it's a good situation, but, so yeah. Thinking of books, when we were during a pandemic, we had two books. One was, Leaders Eat Last by Simon Sinek.
Yeah.
And then, The Writer of a Lifetime, Bob Iger, which is
okay.
And I think both of them talk about innovating, but they all talk about integrity, you know, and I think that's, you know, again, it's that trust and the commitment to each other. I mean, those are good things. So, anyway, going back, I think I just want to make sure that I've left us in solid ground. That's the bottom line.
Well, I'm sure you will. And don't retire for a couple of years.
No,
I think that your team loves you. I mean, that's one of the main reasons why I wanted to get you on this show, is because they all kind of came over and told me, you know, what impact you've had on them personally and how much they have enjoyed working there, which I think is great for us leaders out there to be able to. Hopefully we just realize what kind of impact we do have on people, right? And the difference we make, not just at the office, but the example that we could set for them in their personal lives, either as a parent or whatever, you know, or as a child too.
Yeah.
So I think that's awesome. Now we are kind of coming up on time, but can you give me a good baseball story?
Well, I can remember the day that Chipper Jones was signed by us. I was on the field. I know that's somebody you kind of wish you were, I guess, right, Damon?
Well, let me just stop for one second. I was the 13th pick in the same year as Chipper, and I think that we would have ended up at Bradenton, Florida, or someplace. And the scouting director, I can't remember his name. Gosh, you and I talked about him before.
Yeah.
I think he passed away recently.
Paul Snyder.
Paul Snyder said, hey, you know, you could come play alongside Chipper, the first pick in a draft. But yeah, so anyways, Chipper was drafted.
Yeah, he was on the field. I can remember, you know, at the time, it's like, wow, he's just a little runt. But he didn't turn out to be a little runt. I mean, one of the best hitters in the game.
And great hands.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And great hands, too.
Yeah. Often I would do things for Mr. Aaron. His office would ask me to do stuff. And after I've done some things, I'd come back and there'd be an autographed Henry Aaron bat at my desk or an autographed baseball, you know. So to be able to say hello to Mr. Aaron on a regular basis and to have him hold my first child when she was born.
Come on.
You know, those are things you can't trade, you know. And that's what I liked about the game. You meet so many great people. I mean, I've had phone calls from, you know, voicemails from Reggie Jackson or Harmon Killebrew or, you know, and then I did a, when I was early in my career, back in the day, we would do these caravans where you get a bunch of players and we would just travel the whole Southeast. So I was I get an RV and I got several players and we would just get in this RV and go from town to town. You know, we go to Pensacola, Mobile, Knoxville, Rome, Georgia, just going all over the place and playing cards with these guys in the back of an RV. And we're playing a game and I'm, you know, we're playing with pennies. So I had no clue that these pennies were really $100 bills. So when I realized it, I got out. I won.
Did you have to pay up?
I won my thing and I said, you know what? Okay. I got to check on our next layover, whatever. So I realized quickly I did not want to lose.
Yeah.
But one of the things that really cracked me up was that it was 8 o'clock one night in Knoxville, Tennessee, and this player calls me up and he says, are we done for the night? I said, yeah, we're done for the night. And he said, what time are we leaving in the morning? I said, we're leaving at 8 o'clock. What time do I need to get up? And I thought he was joking me. And I said, okay. I said, well, do you shower? Do you shave? And I actually walked him through that and said, well, thank you so much. And I'll get up at this time. I said, okay. So I got back later that year to talk, and I talked to travel secretary who does that as a regular job. He said, no, he wasn't joking you. He was serious. Players are so dependent on what the management tells them to do on a road trip. I was like, what?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I believe it. I mean, I could just imagine the stories that traveling secretaries have to deal with. You know what I mean? I mean, the nonsense that they have to handle.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I had my buddy was played in the big leagues, Jacob Cruz, for several years, and one of his favorite stories was Manny Ramirez was his buddy, and Manny wouldn't cash his checks. He'd stick them in the glove compartment, and a traveling secretary would have to work with the treasurer to figure out what's going on here, because he was thrown off the books, you know?
Yep, it doesn't surprise me. There was another time I went to a day game in Cleveland, and back then it was the old stadium, and there was no one in the ballpark. It was a day game. I'm in the stadium, and one of our former players was at second base, and he recognized, hey, Paul, how's it going? He says, hey, do you need any comp tickets? Well, I said, I'm already in the ballpark.
Yeah.
That, you know, so.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And I was, my favorite Brave growing up was Dale Murphy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Dale Murphy.
I remember the day he was traded. It was 1989, I think it was, or 1990. But anyway, I can remember specifically he was down in the tunnel after he got traded and saying goodbye. And because he was such a, talking about approachability, anybody could come up to Dale Murphy and.
Just a humble, great guy, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, it was the Braves were always my team because, you know, just like everybody else, I grew up when they were America's team and I would get home and watch all the games and it stuck with me all these years.
Yeah.
So before we wrap up, do you have any last piece of advice for leaders out there?
I think you just need to pour your life into the people that work for you. I just think you know, they're going to respond to you if you show interest and show that you really care. In my case, I really care. So I want their, you know, I'm not going to say that I never discipline anybody. I do discipline. That's part of being in connection with your employee, you know? So I've earned the right by doing the things I do. And I would just make sure that you stay connected and don't, you know, I think it doesn't hurt to get on the phone and talk to customers. You know, it's your business. And I think that people know that that this is what the Braves represent. And they know that we're, you know, if the leader's going to do it, they can talk to anybody on my staff. So lead by example.
Lead by example. And one thing I'll just double down on there is we talked about this a little bit earlier. The value you bring, the value you perceive you bring to customers isn't always what they're actually receiving. So that's why it's super important for senior leaders to get on and ask questions.
Absolutely.
Anyways, Paul, this has been awesome. You know, just to kind of recap, we talked about the value of being connected, you know, both to your team and to your customers, like the story you shared during COVID, the value of creating a great sales culture. A lot of it has to do with continuous learning, you know, giving them the opportunity for growth, whether that's internally up through the organization, and really caring about your people, being authentic, being there for them, and adjusting and adapting over time. Because if you don't adjust and adapt over time, you get left behind.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, thank you very much. And for all our listeners out there today, if you got value out of this, which I couldn't see how you couldn't, do me a favor, please rate and review our show on your favorite channel. And until next time, stay curious and keep learning. Have a good day, everybody. Thank you.